And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another edition of the Pug and Cop Boxing Show. This is Mike Coppinger alongside Lance Pugmire of The Athletic. Tons to get into. We have a big fight on Saturday on ESPN. Miguel Burchell defending his 130-pound title against fellow Mexican warrior Oscar Valdez. Should be a war. And we're going to be joined by Hall of Fame promoter Bob Arum of Top Rank to break down the battle, along with updates on Fury Joshua, Taylor Ramirez, the Teofimo Lopez situation, and much, much more. So everyone, if you haven't already, please like, subscribe, rate, and review. We really appreciate it. And now, let's jump right into the show.
Let's get ready to podcast!
Lance Pugmire.
If you're going to go stick your head in the sand like that, get out of the sport.
Mike Coppinger.
It's creating a huge mess. It's absurd.
No, you're wrong. So, this
seems like a cash grab.
You need to turn up and you need to be on it.
We just started going at it.
You got to go eat.
The Pug and Cop Boxing Show on The Athletic.
Lance, I'm really excited for this one. I think it's been a while since we've had a great action fight. Probably, I mean, Jojo Diaz Rakhimov was a good action fight, but I'm talking about a classic, a fight of the year. And that could be this on Saturday, right? 7 p.m. Pacific start on ESPN. Miguel Burchell, Oscar Valdez, 130-pound title on the line. According to BetMGM, one of our sponsors, Burchell is minus 340, which sounds about right to me. I think he's going to win for sure. Oscar Valdez, plus 300 or plus 310 line is moving. And we're also going to talk about those odds with Bob Arum, the veteran of the fight game, of course, 89 years old, been in the sport more than 50 years, and this fight is going to be at the MGM Grand. So, you know, Lance, right away when I see that, I do think that Burchell minus 340, I think that's a good bet. I think Burchell is going to win by knockout. I think he's the stronger, bigger fighter. I think he's just the better fighter. I mean, Oscar Valdez is a good fighter. He has a great trainer in Eddie Reynoso. He's an Olympian. But I think he's shown a lot of vulnerability in there. He doesn't really move his head that much. His defense is suspect, and he's just there to be hit.
Yeah, you know, Mike, let's be honest. I mean, he cannot revert to the Oscar Valdez version that existed, especially in that fight against Scott Quigg, because, you know, and that's why he went out and got Eddie Reynoso. So I think that in breaking down this fight, I think it's Miguel Burchell attempting to, you know, assert just how strong he is as a power puncher on the guile and the intelligence of Oscar Valdez and Eddie Reynoso in the ring. I mean, obviously, Oscar Valdez, as much as he's saying it, you know, that he loves the idea of these Mexican wars that he has watched in the past. And I have a story up on The Athletic talking about this where I spoke to both Marco Antonio Barrera and Eric Morales, who had that legendary trilogy back in the early 2000s. You know, Oscar Valdez can't afford to fight that kind of fight against Miguel Burchell, or he's just going to be another knockout victim of Miguel Burchell, who has, you know, now defended his belt six times and is nearing the record of nine straight title defenses at 130 pounds by Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. So, but I think that if Oscar Valdez can revert to the training that he has as an Olympic fighter, you know, the fundamentals, the discipline, and just try to make this a boxing match, he has an opportunity to survive. Because look, let's be honest, Miguel Burchell has been sort of an assassin in the ring, but other than beating Francisco Vargas to originally win the belt, he hasn't had an opponent of the substance of Oscar Valdez. And Oscar Valdez, to me, there's just something about this guy, the fact that he would not yield to the fractured jaw, the fact that he was able to get off the canvas a fight before that and a title fight. There's a toughness and a resilience to Oscar Valdez that to me is world-class and special. And I think that's why I do expect it to be a pretty sensational fight on Saturday night on ESPN, Mike.
You know, Lance, I'm not as bullish on Valdez as you. Do you think it's going to be great action? I think it could be one-way traffic, at least as the fight moves on. Maybe it's competitive early, but I just think Burchell is going to be a buzzsaw in there. I think he's going to win, get the win by knockout, and then hopefully we can get Burchell versus Shakur Stevenson. You know, that's an easy fight to make. Miguel Burchell told me yesterday that he is on a fight-by-fight with Top Rank. He's with Zanfer. So there's going to be a lot of options for Burchell if he wins. 130 is fucking stacked right now, Lance. I mean, Jojo Diaz, Shavkat Rakhimov, even Tevin Farmer's there. We have Jamel Herring fighting Carl Frampton in Dubai. We have, of course, Gervonta Davis, who's the biggest star in the division. And I feel like I'm probably forgetting some guys still.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the top of the heap, I think, Mike, is Miguel Burchell and Shakur Stevenson. And I think Miguel Burchell, you know, just wants to sort of affirm his status. I mean, he had some drama going on this week with his trainer, Alfredo Caballero, struggling to get out of Mexico with some visa issues. But apparently he reached U.S. soil as we speak, and he is on his way or en route to Las Vegas. So that's good. I mean, Burchell had a great comment on a conference call yesterday. He basically said, like, I consider myself like a million-dollar yacht, and I need my captain to be there with me to navigate through the rough water. So, look, Miguel Burchell has a lot of personality, Mike. I think he's sort of been overlooked. You know, he's not mentioned at all in, like, a pound-for-pound list, but he's been dominant. And I think if he has that same type of dominant victory as you seem to be predicting against Oscar Valdez, then, look, the 130-pound division that we know is so deep just, you know, becomes, it rises to a next level that is going to be extra special as we move forward. And it's going to make for a lot of tough choices for Bob Arum at the top of, at the head of Top Rank as to what fights he wants and how he's going to make those.
Yeah, and you know, I knew I was forgetting somebody, Chris Colbert, who had that big win over Jaime Arboleda on Showtime late last year. He's a real player too at 130. So, you know, this is a great division. You know, I can't wait to see what happens at 130, but you know, you have to think Miguel Burchell is number one in the division right now, and he's going to try to reaffirm his status on Saturday. And also on Saturday, Lance, I know we touched on this on the last episode, but we have Adrian Broner fighting Santiago, and no surprise, but Adrian Broner, according to Boxing Scene, Broner's weight. The fight was supposed to be at 140 pounds, and no shock, now it's a 147. And this has happened many times with Broner. It happened with the Adrian Granados fight, and here it is again. So, I don't really care that much about that fight, but I do look forward to that fight on the undercard between Otto Wallin and Dominic Brazil. I think that's going to be a heavyweight shootout.
Yeah, that should be good, Mike. And I know that, you know, we had this discussion last show, and you know, I'm sitting here trying to make the case for Adrian Broner, and then this happens again. You know, let's hope it's not a slide back to the old Adrian Broner. You know, I think a lot of people want to see this guy succeed because of his personality and because of the skills that we have seen shine in the past. So I hope he at least looks strong and wins in dominant form and remains a player, you know, hopefully at 140. But, you know, if it's going to be a welterweight, he's going to have to continue to hone his skills to make sure that he can be a competitive factor in that division.
Yeah, and look, Broner could be in great shape for all we know. You know, like we said on this podcast, Jojo Diaz, he appeared to be in pretty good shape, even though he didn't make weight. He came on strong late in the fight and certainly looked strong throughout the match. I think the problem is, you know, Diaz told me he gained way too much weight in between fights, and Broner did the same. Broner had to lose like 35 pounds, so you know, if you gain too much weight in between the fights and then you lose a lot of it, you still could be in great shape, right, Lance? Because you're going hard in training camp, but it's just we ran out of time.
Absolutely. And muscle gets real heavy too. So you don't know how that was affecting and what part of the regimen, you know, weight training was and all of that. So, Mike, I know you got some news. What's going on with Devin Haney? Any news on what he's doing next?
Yeah, you know, Devin Haney, I know he's in talks to fight Jorge Linares. And when I tweeted it, Haney retweeted and then Linares said, let's get it on. So they both seem to be down for the fight. But after that, I had Samson Lukowicz, who promotes Javier Fortuna, call me and say, no, Fortuna's going to fight Devin Haney. So it's really unclear right now if it's going to be Haney versus Linares or Haney versus Fortuna. Fortuna is the top ranked contender, I believe, in the WBC's Mumbo Jumbo at 135, where Teofimo Lopez is the franchise champion. Devin Haney is also the champion. And then you have, I think, Ryan Garcia is the interim champion. And then Fortuna is the number one contender. So I think Samson's trying to get that mandatory ordered. That could hold up a Linares-Haney fight. But otherwise, I know the intention is for all sides to make Devin Haney Jorge Linares. That will be a sensational step up for Devin Haney, who's looking for a big fight. He's been criticized for his opposition. He wasn't impressive, really, against Yuriorkis Gamboa, though he won clearly in his last fight in November. Right. And Linares is a real guy. You know, he, notwithstanding that fight at 140 pounds where he was knocked out in two rounds like Pablo Cesar Cano, he gave Vasily Lomachenko a really tough fight a few years ago at 135, and I love that fight.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And, Jorge Linares is a proud, getting older warrior. And, you know, look, I mean, if he has the opportunity here to, upset the apple cart, so to speak, with all of these young guys angling for, you know, these positions of prominence. We spoke to Devin Haney. Remember, he compared himself, you know, just like to Sugar Ray Leonard in regards to the competition with three other guys that Sugar Ray had back in the day. So if Linares can step in there and rely on his experience and maybe present some kind of problems and issues that Devin Haney's never seen before, you know, it could be an interesting evening.
Yeah, Lance, it could be. And we were supposed to have Oscar Valdez joining the show to break down his fight against Burchell, but instead we're going to be joined by the legendary Bob Arum, our favorite, the Hall of Fame promoter, 89 years old. And Bob, thank you so much for joining us now. You have a big fight on Saturday, another Mexican war. You've done a million of them in the past. Miguel Burchell, Oscar Valdez, 130-pound title fight. Biggest fight of the year for you so far. What fight does this remind you of, if any, of all the Mexican fights you've done in the past?
Well, there have been great Mexican fights that I've done, but this reminds me most of Morales and Barrera, particularly the first fight. I mean, that was the most incredible fight. I remember it like it took place yesterday. I mean, one guy would punch the hell out of the other, push him from one end of the ring to the other, and you'd think the referee was going to jump in and stop the fight. And then the guy who was getting pummeled would pull himself together and start beating the hell out of the other guy. What a great, great fight. What a great fight. I mean, that was one of my all-time favorite fights. And you know who was on the undercard?
Yeah.
Margarito against Sergio Martinez. Can you believe that? That was
the undercard. Yeah, that was before Sergio Martinez really rose to stardom.
Margarito beat him.
I know Margarito had a lot of controversy with the hand wraps and everything, but man, he was a fun fighter. That first fight with Miguel Cotto, I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible. I mean, Margarito, almost every fight he had was incredible. I mean, he was a real gutty guy. Wasn't the most skillful fighter, but certainly the bravest.
Yeah, you know, Bob, we talk about the Mexican blood in fighters, and we talk about, you know, the fact that they come from Mexico and what that means. But you've seen enough of these fights over time. What is it that makes the Mexico versus Mexico fight just so special, especially when it's, you know, featuring two high-level elite performers like these two guys that are coming up Saturday on ESPN?
Mexico against Mexico, two fighters, brings out the passion and the desire in both of them. If a Mexican fighter fights somebody from a different ethnic group, or even a Mexican fighter against a Mexican-American, they want to win and they fight like hell, but it's not the same kind of machismo as when they're fighting each other, particularly if they're elite level. Somebody asked me, I've been doing interviews all day, somebody asked me, what's next for the winner? I said, look at it from the standpoint of the two fighters. For the two fighters, there's no what next. The guy who wins goes with his chest puffed out in Hermosilla, in Guadalajara. He's number one. The guy who loses is only hoping to get a rematch done in the future.
We'll be back right in a minute after we hear from one of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I just did a story on this fight, and I spoke to Barrera and Morales, and Barrera actually told me he's so high on this fight, he thinks that the back and forth is going to exceed his fight with Morales. I mean, talk about the fight itself. Obviously, you've got this big...
If it does, people watching him get heart attacks, because that fight was absolutely the way I remember it. Back and forth. Morales is pounding the hell out of Barrera. Suddenly, Barrera pulls himself together, starts pounding him. You know, it wasn't a lot of, you know, each guy throwing punches at the same time. They, like, took turns. It was what a great fight. If this fight comes anywhere close, no less, exceeds it, it will be a classic for our time.
Yeah, speaking of our time, Bob, it just feels like to me that there's been a dearth of high-quality action fights over the last few years, particularly when we talk about Mexico versus Mexico. Do you agree? And if so, why is that not the case?
I don't know. I mean, the tendency has been more to match Mexicans against non-Mexicans. For example, another gutty, unbelievable Mexican, Zepeda, who fought the Branche.
Yeah.
That was the fight of the year. But again, we've had Mexican and Mexican, but Mexican national against Mexican-American, like Zepeda and Ramirez. That was a very, very intense fight.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is you have Oscar Valdez here. He was an Olympian, represented Mexico. He's been an action fighter for a long time. But in my opinion, he hasn't quite reached the level that a lot of people expected him to. But with a win over Burchell, then he has. All that is erased.
And, you know, if you presented that to Oscar, who I know very well, he would shrug it off. For him, beating Burchell, he don't care about pound for pound. He don't care about the acclaim of you or anybody else. He just wants to beat Burchell so he can puff his chest out when he's walking in Hermosillo, Guadalajara.
You know, he's going to need to do some things, though, Bob, because he is the naturally smaller guy. He's coming in with 5 inches less of reach. And, you know, Miguel Burchell is just such a ferocious knockout fighter. Valdez is going to have to lean on his intellect. And I know that, you know, now he's working alongside, you know, a great trainer in Eddie Reynoso, who has Canelo Alvarez. Is this a battle of just that brawn of Burchell versus the brains of Valdez?
Well, to some extent it is, because clearly Burchell has the physical advantages. As you said, he's the bigger guy, has the bigger reach, and punches harder, I think. But Valdez punches pretty hard himself, and has an amazing boxing intellect, which unfortunately for him, even though he's won all his fights, he doesn't use all the time, because sometimes he forgets himself likes to revert to what he likes best, is just the brawl. But I think Eddie Reynoso, who's his great trainer, will rein him in and have him fight a more intelligent fight.
I mean, when you look at a guy with a zero in the loss column, you know, you're always impressed, especially when they're at this level. And Oscar's done some things. I mean, we've seen those fights against Cervania and against Scott Quigg, you know, where he had the fractured jaw, where he is just kind of hell-bent to never lose a fight. that has to mean something going into this fight. And I think that, to me, that sets up the dynamic of there is going to be no give in either man.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, Oscar is one of the most courageous guys in the ring that I've come across. I mean, he's a guy who refuses to lose. I mean, imagine getting your jaw broken in the fifth round and you're fighting a guy who missed weight, so he outweighs you by a lot, and you go toe-to-toe with him, and you beat the hell out of him, and you win a unanimous decision. I mean, that tells you all you want to know about Oscar Valdez.
Right. And Bob, look, Miguel Burchell, I you know, he's been at it for a long time, 6 title defenses, been a champion, I think, for 4 years now. And he's more than a 3-1 favorite, and all bets are presented by BetMGM, and this fight is at the MGM, actually. Bertel's the favorite for a reason. This guy's really strong. He comes straight forward. He's a powerful puncher, and a lot of people think he's the number one guy in a really stacked division. I mean, this is the best I can remember 130 in a long time. Between besides Burchell and Valdez, you have Shakur Stevenson, who you also promote. You have Gervonta Davis. You have Jojo Diaz, who fought Shavkat Rakhimov on Saturday. That was a really good fight. You have Rakhimov, obviously. Where do you see this division going? Let me not forget Frampton and Herring too.
Herring, right.
Frampton and Herring are going to fight. They're going to fight in Dubai. So,
well, you know, if I had a, first of all, let's talk about Burchell and Valdez. Burchell is a 3-1 favorite, you know, maybe a little bit more. But I think for value, for money, the bet should be on Valdez. I think it shouldn't be a 3-1 fight. But that's my personal opinion. Secondly, I really think that either guy, Burchell and Valdez, in with Shakur Stevenson, would be a classic. But, you know, the way Shakur Stevenson is going, it'd be hard for anyone to beat him.
Yeah. And Miguel Burchell against Shakur. I know Shakur's been calling out Burchell for a long time. I spoke to Miguel yesterday. He said that's the fight he really wants next. But he's not looking past Valdez, of course, he said. But he also said that he is on a fight by fight with Top Rank, even though Top Rank has the partnership with Zanfer. Is that your look at it too?
Yeah, Zanfer is his promoter, and we do a deal with Zanfer, who, you know, is Fernando Beltran's company, and he's family with Todd DeBuff, and that's true. And we do a fight by fight deal with Zanfer on Burchell. But again, we're going to deliver, if he wins, big fights for him. And there'll be no fight bigger, in my opinion, than Burchell and Shakur. And that would be a major pay-per-view fight.
That is what you're hoping to do, Bob?
No, I'm not saying okay. Open, because, you know, if you had a bet, you know, with the odds, you know, you'd bet Valdez.
Okay. Well, I mean, clear up. I mean, you mentioned, Mike mentioned the situation with Frampton. And Herring. I mean, this was a fight that was supposed to take place February 27th in England, and now it's going to be pushed back to Dubai in the spring. What is going on there?
Yeah, it's going to take place, I think, either March 27th or April 3rd, and it's going to be in Dubai, in a spanking new stadium in Dubai, where we'll hopefully get a lot of people in. It'll be a big, big event. They're talking about putting Mike O'Conlon on the card as well. It'll be a tremendous, tremendous battle. And we expect that we'll be able to televise it over on ESPN on a Saturday afternoon, which is April 3rd or March 27th.
Yeah, Bob, I mean, you've wanted to break into the Middle East for a long time. We had the major heavyweight title fight between Joshua and Ruiz in Saudi Arabia. Now we're going to have Frampton Herring in Dubai. Do you think this is the beginning of the Middle East really becoming more of a hotbed for boxing?
Well, the first thing they did was the Abraham Accords. So now I'm welcome with open arms with my Muslim brothers in the Middle East. And yeah, I hope to do a lot of events in the Middle East. there is going to be an impetus for tourism. And so places like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, two Emirate countries, will all be competing to do events. I think the next big territory for boxing outside of the U.S. and the U.K. will be the Mideast.
Did Frampton actually have a hand injury, Bob? Or I've heard some things, some rumblings that there was actually financial difficulties connected to this fight.
No, I don't think that's true. What the hell does Frampton care about a promoter having or not having financial difficulties? No. I mean, he called me up when his hand, when the pain got, you know, in his hand, and the doctor said that he had to take off for a couple of weeks. But he WhatsApped me to apologize and so forth. No, it was a completely legitimate thing. Remember that crazy situation in Philadelphia where the poor kid was eating breakfast or lunch and a whole column in the hotel collapsed on him and fractured his hand. So it was the same man. Anyway, he'll be fine. But no, the fight would have happened absent the injury.
You've got a lot on your hands, so to speak, because you've got to make sense of who's going to fight who in this 130-pound division. How do you make sense of it? And how talk us through as a promoter where you say, like, you know what, it makes more sense for this winner to fight this winner versus this guy to fight this guy. How do you do that?
Well, I have, I'm blessed with people who are either managers or advisors to these fighters who are very, very intelligent. And I sit and talk it out with all of them. I don't direct them. I don't say, hey, let's do this fight and that fight. I mean, Shakur is guided by James Prince, who's a terrific boxing guy, and Valdez with Frank Espinoza and Eddie Reynosa. Can't get better than that. Burchelt with Fernando Beltran and Abraham, two terrific boxing guys. Herring has the Womack and Crawford advising him, and Frampton has Frank Warren and MDK advising him. So we all talk it out. We figure what's best for everybody. You know, again, my opinion is one opinion.
Yeah. Now, Bob, you've got some other business to tend to. I know with your unified lightweight champion, Teofimo Lopez, who surprisingly is heading toward a possible purse bid situation next week. What is happening with that situation? And can you foresee a scenario where Top Rank ultimately will strike a deal with Teofimo and get that fight to take place?
Well, the purse bid was supposed to be held today, as you know.
Yes.
And because of the severe storm in New Jersey, it's been postponed. I think it'll take place on Tuesday. So up to today, we hadn't been able to reach agreement with either fighter. There's no indication that we're going to reach an agreement now. So it'll go to purse bid. And whoever puts the highest bid in will get the fight. Understand, Teofimo has a 3.5-year contract with us. If somebody else outbids us and does the fight, it's a one-off, not the end of the world. I mean, Kambos is a pretty good fighter, but he's not elite. And, you know, you talk about Burchelt and Valdez, a 3-1 fight. That's probably a 30-1 fight. So if it goes elsewhere, it goes elsewhere. And afterwards, Teofimo comes right back to us. So it is what it is. I'm not happy the way it's played out, because my whole experience in boxing is the fighter deals with the promoter, and the other side is the adversary. In this case, for some reason, the fighter who's promoted by us and the other fighter colluded together to see if they can get the most money. They didn't do anything illegal, but it was not a wise thing, in my opinion, looking at the long picture, for Teofimo people to do. But they did it. And so now we're in purse bid, and there's a way that gets resolved in a business-like manner.
Right. And when you talk about the long run with Teofimo Lopez, obviously this guy, you know, darts into prominence with his victory over Lomachenko. And you would say, like, you want to keep that relationship on sound footing. I mean, how is it? Are you fearful that letting it get to the point where the star fighter Teofimo Lopez is now pissed is going to be something that you're going to have to deal with at a later day, where now there could be like this forever strain?
He's not pissed because he never told us how much he wanted to get, right? We never had that conversation. They immediately ran off and colluded with each other, which they're entitled to do. They didn't do anything illegal. So if anybody should be pissed, it should be us, because that's not the way a fighter deals with his promoter. That will come about when we have a winner with Ramirez and Taylor, and we're looking for an opponent for the winner. That's when the chickens come home to roost.
At the end of the day, what you're saying, though, is that you are not going to be promoting Teofimo's next fight.
No, I'm not saying that at all. What happens if we're the highest bid?
Okay. Okay, Bob.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. There will be a bid placed.
We're going to put a bid in that's not a ridiculous bid. That's a bid that's, I think, what the fight is worth. And if we're outbid, we're outbid. That is the way it works, right?
Right. But there are more parties at play here. You know, there's ESPN that's built Teofimo Lopez up on their network. They don't want to see him go to another network. I know that.
Well, okay. But if he does, he does. The world doesn't end that way. I mean, look, that was a threat that they had, to get us to pay more money than we were willing to pay. But we've talked to the ESPN people. We've explained the situation, and they were 100% on board.
You know, you have a lot of big fights coming up. What's going on with Taylor Ramirez? You mentioned Taylor Ramirez. Is that still looking forward from May 22nd?
That will take place in the spring. We virtually have a meeting of the mind with both fighters. But next week, we'll have a meeting of the mind, and we'll send out the contract. Now, whether the fight is on May 22nd or early June or something like that, that remains to be seen. But it will be in the spring. Now, why do I say that? Because if we, you know, a lot of it depends on this pandemic. If it's unlikely that we could do a lot of spectators on May 22nd, but on June, we could do this, 50, 60%, maybe full capacity, we would put it off a month later because the gate will be very, very large in that fight. The fight definitely will take place in the United States, and I would love to do that fight in Las Vegas.
And Bob, I know from the start you've been outspoken about how serious COVID is, you know, and you've been big on protecting everyone, protocols, whatnot. You were the first ones doing Fight Top Rank in June. You know, Eddie Hearn comes back in August. I think PBC was August. So you were the first out of the gate, but you're going to be the last out of the gate by a long shot with fans. You know, we had fans at Gervonta Davis, Leo Santa Cruz on Halloween, and we've had fans every month since with Eddie Hearn fights, Golden Boy fights, etc. What is the reasoning behind Top Rank waiting so long?
because we wanted to make certain that things were not as dire as they could be. And I think it's time now to come out of bubbles and do fights with spectators. And this will be the last fight that we're planning, unfortunately, Burchell and Valdez, without spectators. From now on, there'll be spectators, maybe limited to a certain percentage, but we'll only do fights with spectators. Because without spectators, no matter how good the fight is, it takes away from the excitement.
Yeah.
And also, cuts off a revenue stream.
For sure.
Yeah, and we're going to see about 14,000 fans at Canelo Alvarez against Avni Yildirim next week in Miami. We had, like, I think 20,000 or so maybe at the Super Bowl a couple of weeks ago. In hindsight, should Top Rank have had Burchell Valdez in front of fans? That would have been a big fight in Texas.
Well, maybe yes and maybe no. It's really, it would have sold out Staples Center. And, yeah.
And in L.A.
Well, in L.A. But again, they aren't opened up yet. And I just didn't want to take a chance with my people, with the fighters in Texas. And maybe it was wrong. It probably cost me some money, but it is what it is. And in retrospect, would I have done something different? Probably. But, you know, we're going to get a great fight on Saturday, unfortunately, without spectators.
Bob, you're going to make some of that money back when Tyson Fury fights Anthony Joshua. Do you have so. What's that?
I would hope so.
Do you have any update for us about where the negotiations for that fight stand? And are we getting any closer to having a venue finalized?
Lance, you got to understand, this is a multi-million dollar venture. Multi. I mean, this is probably the biggest money fight that I've been involved in. And because, I mean, Mayweather-Pacquiao turned out to be a huge money fight, but that was because subsequently with all the pay-per-view buys. So on this fight, where the money is involved, it's all huge. You know, there are lawyers involved. We have a lawyer. Tyson Fury has a lawyer. Frank Warren has a lawyer on our side. Matchroom has a lawyer on their side. So what you do in this situation is they sent us the first draft. And then we made a number of changes, and it's called red line. Different, mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
No, not this, but this. We sent it back to them. They looked at our changes, and they rejected some of the changes and accepted others. They sent it back to us. We then sent it back to them. You know, remember, we have to then, because of the difference in time, I mean, I'm dealing with English lawyers. You know, my lawyer is in California. So it takes time to go over everything. But what I can say is we are down now to the last couple of points. Everybody has done their job. Everybody has had their say. Everybody has gone over the document. And hopefully we'll be able to come to an agreement on these last couple of points, which I really believe will be the case. And at that point, under the contract, which I don't want to talk about what's in the contract, both parties will jointly announce the fight. And then maybe a week or two later, they will announce the site of the fight. That's the plan. Now, the way I'm talking, it's not done yet, but I'm extraordinarily optimistic that it gets done.
Great news, Bob.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you so much again, as always, for joining us. Really, really appreciate it. Can't wait for all the fights, starting with Burchell Valdez, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, good. Hopefully, our next fight in will have not hopefully, our next fights will have spectators. And I think when we do Ramirez and Taylor, we'll be able to do it in a place where 10,000 fans or more will be able to watch. And hopefully the pandemic in the UK will have come under control. So we get a lot of Scottish fans and Brits coming over from the UK to enjoy Las Vegas and watch the fight.
We'll be there. Thank you so much for today, Bob. Appreciate it.
All right, Lance, let's take a real quick pause here as we hear from one of our sponsors. Thanks again to Bob Arum for joining us, colorful as always. Can't wait for the fight on Saturday between Burchell and Valdez on ESPN, and excited for everything else in the pipeline. And one of those fights Bob was talking about, one he wasn't too interested in, the purse bid on Tuesday for Teofimo Lopez against George Kambosos. Bob said that he thought that was a fight that would be Teofimo Lopez as a 30-1 favorite. In actuality, it's really Teofimo Lopez minus 830 and George Kambosos plus 450. Now, Lance, we're going to jump into more mailbag questions. First off, we have a question here for you from your mailbag. And this is basically, recently, the WBA unceremoniously and abruptly stripped Manny Pacquiao of his belt and gave it to Jordanis Ugas. I and a lot of others found that odd. After that, Errol Spence tweeted interest in fighting Ugas, and since he's now a belt holder, Ugas quickly returned interest. So do you think Al Haymon went to the WBA and asked them to make Ugas the champion just so he could stage an in-house fight and avoid Terrence Crawford?
You know, Mike, I mean, look, I don't think that without having two or three sources on this, we can't say that with authority. But I will say this, that when I was doing some reporting on this issue that was going on with the WBA stripping Manny Pacquiao, someone who would definitely know actually made that allegation directly that, you know, look, this kind of stuff doesn't just happen. There are conversations that take place between promoters and between the heads of sanctioning bodies. And that's really nothing new in the sport. But the fact that it would, cause a fighter to be stripped of a belt, I think they're taking it to a next level. To me, Mike, it seems wrong. I mean, I know that, you know, I was talking to a longtime veteran of the sport, and he said it used to be that the sanctioning body was there to represent and allow for a forum, the correct forum, you know, with through the rankings for the fighters to ascend, you know, properly as they work their way up. But now it seems as if they are unbelievably beholden to the promoters. And I think that's what we saw in this situation, definitely, because like you said, I mean, Spence and Ugas now, instead of any talk about Terrence Crawford, it's all about Spence and Ugas. And the only reason it is because Ugas has this belt now. And to me, it's a damn shame.
Or as the question asked, was PBC going to make that fight anyway? And that's why this title's already there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there was angling going on in the first place, and this just makes it a slam dunk.
All right, another question for you, Lance. Are you worried about boxing's future with the rise of UFC and the continuous failure of boxing to get the best to fight the best when they should fight? Crawford Spence should have happened by 2017 and had a trilogy by now. This person says they're 25 and all of his friends think it's funny that he still watches boxing and they all love the UFC. I don't know many young people who watch boxing. I know it's popular with older people who grew up on it. What do you think?
Look, boxing, when it does stage the events that the fans know, are very even. And I'm not going to say that Burchell Valdez coming up on Saturday is definitely like 50-50. Burchell should be the favorite in this fight, but it's a damn good competitive fight. And I think that's what fight fans want more of. And when we see, you know, something lesser than that, and I may have taken some heat from some of the PBC backers about the things that I said about Caleb Plant's last fight, you know, it is dropping the ball, and it is allowing the disparity to widen between how the fans view the competitive matchups in the UFC and those lesser matchups that we see too often in boxing. it is in boxing's interest to stage the types of fights like Crawford Spence that we all know need to happen, that we all know are ready to be made right now. And anything short of that is, you know, look, I've thought about this, and I think I've said this before. It's like it's a self-inflicted gunshot to the head of boxing when the promoters don't work more diligently to allow these, you know, these bouts where you've got two guys at the top of their weight class who are so competitive and so deserving of fighting each other and proving who's the best to make the fight. Let the losses happen. The UFC model has proven that these losses are not a death blow to anyone's career. And so why that doesn't happen, you know, look, it's about money and trying to make more and more money. But at some point, you're going to look up and say, we've had this mentality for too long, and look at the money that we're not making because we are depriving the fan base of the fights that they want to see and the type of competition that they are getting from the UFC model.
All right, there you have it from Lance Pugmire. Hopefully we keep getting the best fight and the best. It looks like we have some good fights coming up, starting with Burchell Valdez. Josh Taylor is going to be fighting Jose Ramirez, and then we're going to have Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury. So I think there's a lot of hope for boxing. That's our show for today. Thanks, everyone, as always, for joining us. Thank you to the legendary Bob Arum, and we'll see everyone next week.